Tonight on the Goblin's Corner.
Combat, injury,
and death.
That's how we roll.
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 Welcome to the Goblin's Corner. My name is Eric.
And I'm Matt.
And tonight,
we're doing combat, injury, and death, man.
That's right. We got a lot of really interesting tidbits for you guys for whatever TTRPG you happen to have, whether it's a gritty cyber technology battle in the streets, or you're conjuring up some kind of crazy spell in the middle of a fantasy campaign. We've got
superhero stuff.
Superhero stuff, some sure. Space battles, maybe?
Anything.
Anything,
anything
really.
At all.
There are three things in any type of game setting like this, combat, injury, and death, and we feel that they really aren't, how should we say this?
Well painted?
Yeah. Yeah, they're painted in black and white tones, and we want to give it a little bit of color for your game to make it better and more fun for your players. But before we get to that,
we have the question of the week.
Yes, we do. So hit me with the question of the week.
All right. Pick a character of yours.
Okay.
You just got the kill shot.
I got the kill shot.
What's your character and how does the opponent go down?
Oh, okay. So I'm going to do Zammit.
Okay.
My Starfinder Technomancer Goblin. And his kill shot is like this. As the wall of fire drops, you see the singed enemies surrounding Zammit, and he leaps up into the air
because
he's got, you know, the feet that can walk on the air.
Yeah, yeah.
He leaps up into the air. You see him charge his laser rifle, and the magic surges through his left hand, and as it arcs towards the laser rifle explodes in a fury of Nova power, and it blows up the entire station, killing him as well.
That sounds probably fair.
That's pretty much what's going to happen.
Yeah. All right.
What about you?
I think I'm going to go Goblin also, but in this case, I'm going to go Goblin Artificer.
Sure.
And I love the concept of, you know, the walking away from the explosion type movie scene, right? But in this case,
old school walking in the wind in slow-mo.
Yeah. In this case, the explosion hasn't happened yet, right? I turn around, my turret faces backwards and just launches a spell-storing bolt.
So just zzz, skook.
Yep. Meteor swarm.
Nice.
So this little bolt, right, from this tiny little arblaster.
There's a bard playing a guitar in the background as Tumbleleaf rolls through the dusty plains.
Yeah, just what a woo.
Yeah, I love that. Do you have a kill shot that you'd like to tell us about and paint a pretty picture? Write to us. info@goblinscorner.com, or you can reach me, Eric, at goblinscorner.com, or
me, Matt, at goblinscorner.com.
All right, let's talk to the lesson at hand now.
Okay.
Combat, injury, and death. Now, before we get into the nitty gritty, a few words.
Yes.
First off,
this, it's not about mechanics so much, right?
Right.
We are trying to discuss the story of combat, injury, and death. It's about thematics, and there's just too many games to try and do mechanics for everything.
Yeah, and there's plenty of other people, shows, podcasts, YouTube videos about specific mechanics in your game. Now, we could do that.
All right, and we might toss in like one or two possible ideas if somebody wants to house rule something, but
we're really more interested in making combat, making injuries, and making death interesting for your game, because it's a storytelling game, right? So
right.
We're all about the storytelling. Now, that being said, we're probably going to toss in some mechanics.
A little bit.
It's going to happen.
Yeah.
And it's not, but we don't want this to be the end all be all, and you shouldn't take this as a verbatim rule, because I could be talking about an example in a fantasy campaign and you're playing Travelers, or you're playing
Shadowrun, or
yeah, anything really. So
masks, whatever.
So use these as examples and then base your game off of that.
Yeah, it's just something to think about.
Yeah, the spice. Just use them to spice up some rather boring combat, make for a bit more of a dramatic game.
And I mean, that's really why we're doing this, right? Is that some games have amazing combats and some of them are really kind of boring.
Some of them are boring as fuck.
It's true.
Yeah, and that's a great point because it really comes down to what kind of game are you running?
Sure.
So you may have a gritty realism game that you're running, and in which case some of these rules are going to be very useful. You might instead have something that's very much anime style, where if you push someone through a brick wall, they're not going to be hurt at all. They're just going to dust themselves off and go, now you've made me angry.
Sure. In which case, most of this probably doesn't apply overly.
That could be different types of injuries at that point.
That's
or
true.
Different types of death. So think of that and think of the kind of game that you want to run. And there's no bad game, really.
No, as long as everybody's having fun, you're playing the right game.
Exactly. So one of the reasons we would do this, and we go going on gritty and realism and such, is to make things mean more to right. your players. And oftentimes that makes combat tougher. Now, it's one thing to be at one hit point after you slay the dragon, but it's a different story when you've crawled out of the dragon's mouth, you're missing a limb, part of your face is burned off, you're at one hit point. Like, that is way different than the adventure just like, oh, I'm at one hit point, screw that.
Yeah.
And so
I'm going to have to take a nap for the night and feel better in the morning.
Correct. And depending upon the game, you know, both are right. So think about that as well. Now on death, there's a little bit of a different story with that as well. Again, things should be meaningful if you're playing a story campaign because you're telling a story. Make the story as fun as possible.
Sure.
Death could be something which is cartoony or fun. There's, I don't know if you've watched, what is it, Res Zero? It's like a anime where this kid basically gets in this mystical fantasy world and he keeps getting his ass killed and then he keeps coming back. But no. He remembers everything, so it's like Groundhog Day, except he dies every time.
Nice. No, I have not seen that.
It's kind of comedy because he obviously understands, because it's filled with, oh yeah, you're the helpful wizard trope. You know,
right.
And he literally just says that, right?
Nice.
So death in your game may be something like that. If you're going for more realism, you may not want it to be like respawning in a video game, right? So in that case, make death dramatic, maybe tension filled. Or even if you come back, make it harrowing.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty simple. You want to start with combat?
Let's do combat. So how can we make combat more enjoyable? And by the way, this first rule, I think, should be the rule for all of these. But we'll obviously beat this into the ground.
Right. Well, this one especially doesn't matter on the system, right? You could literally and should, as far as I'm concerned, do this for any system.
Sure.
Descriptions.
Yes.
Right? You tell the story with the action. A lot of people, when combat breaks out, the story stops and it is a stumbling block for the story.
There are tropes for this in D&D all the time where you're in the story and then all of a sudden everybody goes and gets chips because combat starts.
Right.
Or they go on a smoke break because combat lasts so long.
Sure.
Now, some of this is combat systems.
Yep.
And again, we're not going into that.
Right.
There are ways to optimize your combat systems. If you guys want us to do an episode on optimizing whatever version of combat system you happen to be running, let us know.
Yeah, we'll throw out some ideas. No big deal.
But what we're interested more in is how can you get the entire party into combat? And descriptions are the way to do it.
Right. If you've got one character who is the agile monk, right, doing backflips, parkour all over the place, give them the chance to do that. If they want to do something absolutely ludicrous, toss an athletics or an acrobatics roll in there with it. Don't make that their individual action, because otherwise then they're just going to run up and do their little attack, right?
Yep.
But if they want to do a dive roll over the enemy and come up into a back kick, all of that, sure. You know what? Make an acrobatics check as part of your movement.
Mm-hmm.
And then make your attacks. People play monks so that they can do kung fu gold shit.
Yeah.
people play wizards so that they can go through and do the dancing chicken and, you know, whip out their sulfur and guano and fling the fucking fireball, right? That's...
Well, and that's the thing, is the description should relate to what your characters are doing. I mean, think of some descriptions. Now, some DMs will often say, what do you do? How do you cast that spell? How do you do that action? And I think that's a really cool thing to do, because that puts it back on the players to describe something they clearly want to do. They've got a soundtrack in their head.
Right.
They know what they're, you know, they know what their character wants to do in this setting. Now, to be fair with that, we should talk a bit about group actions versus individual actions in a combat setting.
Okay. So individual actions are simple, right? That's pretty self-explanatory.
I attack the dragon.
Right. What is your concept of group actions?
Coordinated effort.
Mm-hmm.
Or when you are describing the actions as the group, you might get everybody's action and then describe it as a whole scenario for the round.
Right.
A lot of storytellers will get everybody's action and then they will sum up, okay, here's what happened this round or this right. turn. And I think that's a really cool thing to do, because if you've got five or six people, everyone's doing something at once. That also gets everybody on board instead of individual descriptions of every single person. By the time they get to, you know, we play with like 6-7 people sometimes, and we get to number 7, person number 1's already forgotten what person number 5's done.
Right.
So summing up that round is a great way to do it. It also gives you, we'll get the tactics in a minute, but it also gets you into where everybody is, what's going on, what tactics are they using, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, they're, like you said, we'll get into tactics in a second. It did, an idea came to my head, so I'll get to that in a moment. But provide something theatrical during combat.
Like what?
Lighting, right?
Sure, you could dim the lights, or if you're playing Star Trek, you know, red alert, everything, and get some LED lights.
I was
going to
say,
go
we've got red lights. Literally change the lighting for the purposes of combat.
And have.
Yeah. The whole first episode for One Last Job was done in red lighting.
Much to everyone's chagrin.
I think it should have been, though.
Right? Yeah. Like, you could play some music.
Yeah. What else you got? You got really? I did not write this one. Crack open a can of kick-ass beer.
Crack open a can of whoop-ass beer, sir.
All right. But yeah, there's lots of things you can do to set a tone, and that's one of them.
Speaking of tone, what tone are you trying to aim for in your descriptions?
Right.
So it runs the gamut, depending upon the game, and sometimes the game systems actually will say this over the individual storytellers, but it depends, right?
Sure.
You have, of course, on one scale, the gritty combat.
Oh, yeah. Grimdark. Murr.
You get a paper cut, get a goddamn infection, and you got to lop that arm off now, man. And now you have sepsis.
Yep.
And that there are some games that literally are like that.
Yes.
Versus what I consider to be more of, and I didn't mention this in this, but like a fantastical, where you get hurt, it's gritty, but you overcome it.
Right.
Then we get more on the stupid side, where you get like the anime wounds, right?
Right.
Where,
well, I think in a lot of times, I think fantasy and anime
go hand in hand.
Have a lot,
sure,
of combat similarities.
Because all I know is I pull a back muscle, you know, standing up sometimes, and you're jumping into the jaws of a dragon. That's some anime shit right there.
Sure.
Now, we all want a little bit of that.
Yeah.
So you need to mitigate the difference between your gritty realism and your anime. And then, of course, you know, some of these systems are straight up cartoon combat.
Sure. And I mean, and you can do your descriptions. You can play any of these themes with any system if you want to do your descriptions that way, right? If you jump into the dragon's open mouth and then start doing a speed bag on his uvula, right? Like, that is absolutely cartoon based. And that's fine. If that's the game you're playing, like, go with it. I think that's hilarious.
If shit gets weird, roll with the weird.
I mean, if a dragon starts to swallow me whole, that uvula is coming with me. Like, that's just how this is going to go.
Rip out my knives and I'm going to go Drax the Destroyer on that guy.
Exactly. All right. Let's move to tactics, since now we're talking about combating from the inside of creatures.
Okay. Speaking of tactics, tactics is all about options.
Yeah.
One of the biggest problems I see in running games is not communicating where people are, what's going on, and how they can effectively disable the combat, right? Whether it be by killing the monsters, intimidating somebody, nuking them with a fireball, whatever it happens to be.
Right.
Spraying them with an Uzi.
Well, and how you can affect the world around you as part of that.
Sure. So players want to look for options. They want to see tactical options. And a lot of times players don't immediately see it. If you're describing something, they may not know. I hear a lot of this. I describe something and then the players go, where am I? Well, right. Then you haven't described the situation enough.
Right.
And all of us have been there.
Sure. 100%.
So I would say the first thing is describe the setting, the combat area, the immediate vicinity as well. Like, what's going on? If you can do that, then you're already ahead of 99% of the storytellers and DMs out there. And there's a lot of ways you can do it.
I mean, one of the most common ways, especially for Dungeons and Dragons and Pathfinder and such, is a battle map.
Yeah.
That is the easiest way to give people spatial understanding. Now, you still have to properly describe the scene for them, unless you've spent 1,000 hours making an actual setting that has moving parts.
Yeah, nobody does that. If you do that, let me know. I want to play your game because I really want to see what it's like.
Yeah, no, I'm with it.
So visual aids are great.
Yeah.
And it could even be, if you're playing in person, when we're still allowed to do that, playing in person can literally just be the guy's over here and you're gesturing.
Right.
And then you walk to the other side of the room and this bad guy's here and you guys are here and you walk to the center of the room, right?
Right.
Just generalistic terms like that help.
Yeah.
The more descriptive, though, the better.
Well, we're physical storytellers. How far am I away from them? The fridge over there. No. Like, and then we'll just walk over there and be like, this far.
Well, this comes to something I think that is very useful, is a frame of reference is definitely necessary.
Yeah.
And that allows people to know where they are in relation to everything else.
Yeah.
Now, the battle maps help with that, but sometimes you just gotta physically point like a primate.
Mm, right there. Yeah, I mean, different people understand things different ways, and giving them multiple methods of getting it makes it easier for everyone involved. So then you've got, for tactics, you really have to grasp the difference between individual combat and large scale combat.
Yes. Individual combat. And I would say individual combat is anything in a group, like a typical party.
Right.
Because even that is individual combat, because it usually degenerates to, I'm going to attack that guy, the monk's going to attack that guy and that guy, the barbarian's going to get in and hug those people to death, the wizard's going to nuke everybody, including the barbarian, right? That's just how it works.
Sure.
In space combat, it's ship versus ship or whatever it is, but then the large-scale battles are...
Yeah, we're not talking about
10.
Four people versus four people anymore.
We're talking hundreds or thousands.
Sure. I mean, you could... But even as far as I'm concerned, the second you break 10 combatants, you're moving into large scale range.
And then there's a lot more factors that have to be thrown in.
I want to correct myself real quick. Not 10 combatants, 10 combatants on each side.
Yes.
Is what I meant. Sorry.
I got that, but they may not have. It's good. So think about, what kind of battle are you throwing? And by the way, if you've never been in a large scale battle, whether it's a space battle, a whole bunch of ships in a Star Wars game, or if you're playing D&D and you've got an army headed towards you, those battles are fun because most combat in RPGs is usually individual combat.
Yeah.
And this allows your players to experience strategy and the role-playing aspect of stuff as well. That's kind of fun. Yeah. So think about that.
And to me, that's the difference between individual combat and large-scale combat, right? Tactics versus strategy.
Yeah, and how do you describe strategy?
Here's an example, right? like, it's literally nation versus nation. There's 5,000 people on either side of the encampment. If your party sneaks all the way around the opposing enemy's camp and invises their way through,
yep,
and just flat out murders the commander's tent, the general, the horn blower, or the herald, right, the standard bearer, like all of those people, if your adventuring party is like, we're just going to end this with the least amount of bloodshed possible, and does a surgical strike on the entire leadership of the opposing army, that's strategy.
Yes.
How you succeed at doing that is tactics.
Correct. Now, all of this comes down to whether it's going to be a large-scale battle or an individual assassination, what Matt talked about, is make sure everyone understands what's going on. Nothing is worse than half the players not knowing who's attacking or who is moving where, and because that gets everybody frustrated and angry.
Yes.
So describe.
Make sure clarity is 100% or as close to it as you can get.
If you got to get out your kids' Lego blocks and mock something up, ad lib, do it.
Just don't drop one. You'll step on it later.
That is true. So let's talk about a little bit about combat options now.
Yes.
Because not everything has to be hack and slash.
Right.
In a combat situation.
Well, let's take the example that I just gave you, right? You've got two big armies, and your heroes come through, surgical strike, murders the entire top end of that army.
Mm-hmm.
The morale of the troops underneath them are probably broken.
So you might have some people leaving?
Oh, yeah. The second you realize that the entire commander's camp is completely engulfed in flame, the standard bearer is dead, and everybody who's supposed to be making the intelligent decisions for this battle are gone, might be time to just go back to farming.
Yeah. Intimidation's another good example of that in addition to morale. So here's a good example for that. You could have your heroes roll through with a shining beacon. The mage is all dressed in white on a horse, and he comes over the ridge with the rest of the army right behind him, and he's like, oh, I cast light.
And they're all on horseback.
And they're all on horseback. And
they're coming from the east on the third day?
They might, in fact, come on the third day. And all of the orcs go, oh, no, the wizard knows to spell light. And so they're intimidated, and thus they suffer a morale minus. Another thing you could do is actually negotiate during combat. And this is either through group combat or individual combat. Because you ever been in a fight? At some point, you might go, you know what? Hold on a second. We don't have to kill everybody. We just have to kill that guy.
Right.
Or we don't have to kill anybody. And disabling a combat situation is defeating that combat situation, regardless of whether you killed them or not.
Right.
So here's a couple examples of that.
You've got just a standard old school white flag, right?
Yeah.
Just woohoo.
Just ceasefire.
Yep. Let's talk this out.
Mm-hmm.
You take let's go back to the example I gave you before, right? Instead of murdering the entire top end of their army, you take them all hostage.
Sure. That defeats the army right there if all of the high ups are taken.
Yeah.
Because no one's running the army.
And now there's no need for a blood feud or us coming back in 3 weeks or whatever. No, you just take them hostage and be like, okay, now we're going to talk about this like civilized people with hostages.
And that would be a really interesting thing, especially if you're playing a game that maybe is not as combat centric.
Yeah.
You could do a hostage takeover where it might be somewhat of a combat action, but not everybody has to die.
Yeah.
De-escalation is another good example.
It is. You could literally go fully defensive. Especially as an individual combat, right? We don't want to murder these guys, but they're a little hot-headed right now. Wall of force. Okay, guys. Let's talk about this for a sec.
Hey, Bard, you've got that banging charisma. Roll up in there and do something.
Yeah.
Be useful in the combat for a minute.
Yep.
So there's a lot of ways, and all of these would be wonderful role-playing experiences. You could do this on a turn-by-turn basis.
Sure.
And then eventually maybe it turns into a minute-by-minute basis because it's no longer, you know, turn-based combat at that point.
Right.
So there's a lot of things you can think of to make these combat situations. You could have a mixture of both of these, by the way.
Yeah.
Be fighting, and all of a sudden you're like, you know what? This isn't the best thing to do. This is also, if you play with alignment, which some people do and some people don't, this is also another wonderful moral quandary to throw people in. Because if the paladin doesn't have to kill everybody, he or she may not kill everybody. Maybe just disable the big bad and then go, everyone else, surrender.
Right. Give them the opportunity.
All right. So let's get rid of this pacifist stuff and let's talk about some sneaky shit.
Well, certainly.
Now, you kind of mentioned, you kind of brought this up already.
But I did. I actually wasn't, I had forgotten about the fact this was up ahead, but assassinations.
Sure.
Just straight up, it's a sneaky, sneaky game with hopefully like one round of combat.
Mm-hmm.
Everything leading up to that is story and sneaking and, you know, illusion, whatever it takes to get past the guards so that you can assassinate.
And most people think of assassination as a knife in the back that's poisoned, but you could also snipe people. You could toss in some traps.
Barbarians can have stealth, and a giant axe is still a great assassination weapon.
Yeah, when you lop off their head, that's definitely a surprise.
Yep. And they cease to be.
Sure. Let's talk about some other options in combat. What else could we do?
You can leave. You can leave combat.
Yeah. And this is really interesting depending upon how you play your games. The general idea is that you throw in a combat that is leveled according to the players. But sometimes things get thrown in and you're not supposed to fight it. You're not always supposed to kill the dragon, guys. Sometimes the dragon eats you. Fleeing from the combat is fine because you go back and stab him later.
Yeah. Or, you know, sometimes you're supposed to have a conversation with the dragon. But to do that, you've got to survive long enough to make that conversation a possible option.
So a strategic retreat might be interesting. And to describe those sorts of things is also great as a DM.
Yeah, because then you get to pour the tension on. You can hear the heavy footfalls directly behind you, the whooshing of the wind blowing grit into your hair.
Brave Sir Robin ran away.
For the comedic value one, sure, absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah. And I would be remiss if I didn't say dirty tricks would also be a wonderful combat option that I'm sure your players have already thought about.
It is the best combat option.
One of the better wizards in D&D is an illusionist.
Yes.
Because if you know how to use your imagination and come up with really good illusions, you can pretty much solve combat without ever killing anybody or making them kill themselves.
It's true.
And while we're on illusions, another great use of combat is the use of terrain.
Yeah. If you've already dug giant holes and you cover them with illusion and they're whole first rank of their army piles into a hole, or even better, if they're charging cavalry, go plummeting into a 20-foot hole.
Or a gelatinous cube.
Sure.
Or a bunch of wall of spikes, or a wall of force when the flying dragon comes at you.
I have no knowledge of that, Senator.
You've only done that in like three of my games.
Well, if they're it invisible, worked. It's yeah. not my fault. Like, walls of force are invisible.
We had a person once use an immovable rod.
Yes.
As a weapon, because they put a spear cap on the end of it and then turn the rod on and face the end towards somebody. And since it's a movable rod, I believe it's, what is it, 10 tons to move it?
It's
maybe like 1,000 pounds or something like
that. It's 2,500, or it used to be 2,500. I don't know what it is now or if they even exist.
It's a ridiculous amount of force to move an immovable rod. And so monster just crashed right in. It went right through the monster. Monster died.
Yep. That's why you withhold actions.
Now that is called strategy.
Yep. And that, I don't even remember who did that. I remember it was done, but all right. So what else do we have here? We got,
well, in according to terrain, what happens when you get pinned down?
Right. Bad things happen.
Maybe. So one of the things I think of when you're getting pinned down, firefights.
Yeah.
Like you're in, that run has gone bad, chummer. And you're behind a brick wall and the Yakuza are just flinging bullets your way. Hot lead is just coming. It's pulverizing the cheap ass ceramic composite that the wall's made out of.
The plastcrete.
Yeah, the plastcrete. Your Street Sam's bleeding on the ground, just his life force just flowing. You could see it. You go astral, and it's time to wreck shit. Urban renewal, bitches. Like, all right, that's my MO.
That is, yeah, 100%.
So think about,
this block is not serving my needs. We will rearrange the block.
Yeah, don't think about, when you get pinned down. You're pinned down. Okay, yeah, but describe this, again, descriptions, right?
Yep.
Descriptions make everything. Sieges are another good example of that, too.
Absolutely. Because sieges are basically just city-level terrain.
Yeah, it's more of a strategic level there.
Yeah. And, sometimes you give up the city block by block and, wait until they get to the end and then blow up the inner walls or what have you. There's... Tactically and strategically, there are dozens of ways to go about a siege.
Lots of ways. So think about some ways you can explore not just the mechanics of sieges and combat and getting pinned down and terrain, but also the descriptions behind them.
Yeah. Trap the whole city and then pull back to the inner keep.
Something that player characters rarely remember, combat isn't always just about them.
Very true.
And so what I mean by that is locals.
Yeah.
So if you're either friendly fire is on a bad side or on a good side, if you can convince the populace to attack the bad guys,
yeah,
then now you've made the DM's job a lot more complex, but at least the combat's more interesting.
100%.
I'm kind of glad that our players sometimes forget about that because that's a lot of other characters to explore.
That's too much talking for them.
That is true.
For about 50% of our players, that's too much talking.
We play with a lot of murder hobos. And finally, in terms of tactics, and this is somewhat on terrain, but it's more on the objects in the terrain. Use the environment. Go Jackie Chan. Anything can be a weapon.
Go Errol Flynn, man. Drop that chandelier on somebody's head.
Absolutely. Flip over that table. Now you've got some cover.
Yep.
Shoot the gasoline that's leaking on the floor. Now you've got a firewall. Reward players for interesting ways to turn the tables on their aggressors.
I agree.
The more descriptive the players get at this stuff, the better. And we've got some things that you can do when they describe really cool stuff like this.
And I am 100% for stacking penalties. If somebody drops caltrops and a grease spell, you take the highest DC between the two of them, and you give the opponent disadvantage for it. Because ball bearings in grease would be absolute garbage to attempt to stand up in.
Absolutely. If you get that astromech stuck in a launcher and you just send him crashing into the Death Star, happens to blow stuff up, that's very creative.
Yeah.
Screw that astromech. He deserved it.
He had it coming. R2, Q3.
Yeah. It's that Q that did it.
It was.
I just can't stand a Q in a droid name. How dare they? We've got more stuff about combat that we will definitely throw at you guys, but we're going to take a short break.
We'll see you in a minute. If there are any topics you would like us to cover, goods or services you would like us to review, or if you would like to sponsor an episode, we would love for you to contact us at info@goblinscorner.com.
And we're back.
Welcome back.
All right, so we were talking about combat, injury, and death, and we just got done talking a little bit about terrain combat, some tactics characters can use, and now the combat is done.
So we discuss what happens after
the combat. There's a lot of stuff that can happen after combat.
One of the things you should do as a storyteller, is describe the after effects of the combat.
What do you mean by that?
Well, there's lots of them. First off, if you take the whole terrain, right, everything's going to be torn to shreds.
If you're spraying bullets everywhere, it's going to be wrecked.
Yeah, so you've got that, and that should be part of your description. But also, what about what you've seen?
Like the horrors of war?
Right. I don't know if you know, but combat is kind of awful.
Yeah.
It's kind of terrible.
Ask a serviceman that's seen combat. It's bad.
Yeah. So how do you deal with that, right? In the cartoony anime style, right? Mostly you just gloss over that.
Yeah, if you're doing high fantasy or high anime type combat situations, you might have mass property damage.
Right.
So you might go in deep into the description of why there's a 40-foot crater where someone Kamehameha'd. But if you are just playing like something more gritty, you might go into a little bit about that, but also how people themselves are wrecked.
Yeah.
Their bodies riddled with holes, their cybernetics slowly shutting down. The urban renewal has just melted everything.
Sure.
One satisfied mage just got his arms crossed, smoking a cigarette, going, I love it when a plan comes together. So describe those horrible things to the best of your ability, and really to the best of the player's ability, because some players don't want to hear about that, even if it's a gritty realism. So again, this all comes with a caveat. Have a session zero.
Right.
Make sure.
Know what's okay and not okay.
Yeah. Make sure that session zero goes into how realistic do you want combat to be? How descriptive do you want me to describe what happens? That sort of stuff.
Yeah. And how much do you want me to tie? Do you want me to do descriptions for actual psychic damage, right? Like the trauma of the situation.
Oh, yeah.
Some people want their characters to develop in that area, and some people want no part of it. And you need to know what is what and what people are okay with.
Breaks it down to like how much role playing you're going to be doing in stuff like that as well, too.
Right.
And some of this, by the way, sometimes it's fun to take on that mantle, because that is definitely a challenging role to play.
Yeah.
And if you're definitely in it for the story or playing a particular character, yeah, I've seen the horrors of war. The blood war raged across our entire plane. That's cool, right?
Right.
And it makes it more than just a number.
Sure. Take the other, the non-psychological side of thing. What about just the physical side of after combat?
Yeah, well, most combat lasts, like real combat, only lasts like 10, 15 seconds usually when you get into a fight. Maybe 30 seconds at best.
Sure.
So think about how long they've been fighting. So we'll go D&D terms here, like a round of 6 seconds.
Sure.
If you've been 10 rounds in it, it's a full minute of combat. You're going to be tired.
Not just that. I mean, that is explosive action. Correct. Right?
Yes.
Your adrenaline, all of that stuff, you're going to be sore. You're going to be tired. Probably, you're going to have some injuries.
Sure. Your cybernetics are all glitching. The smell of cordite fills your nostrils. You've got burn scars from where your gun fired off. I don't know why I'm in Shadowrun. You know what? Every time I think of combat, I think Shadowrun.
Sure.
It's just, there's a slight itching in your right hand because the mana leaked out as you cast that urban renewal with a satisfied grin.
Has it occurred to you that maybe you just want to play some Shadowrun?
I really want to play Shadowrun again. That's really what comes down. Okay, so describe like what the characters are feeling, or ask them what they're feeling.
Yeah,
which is the DM doesn't have to say everything,
right?
And you shouldn't. It's a cooperative storytelling experience. So go ahead and find out how the characters view the stuff they've experienced.
Yeah, I mean, the street Sam may not be super comfortable with the fact that the mage just
vaporized an entire office block. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's something important.
Or the insect shaman jammed his ovipositor into somebody's thorax and just spawned another horrible spirit, burst forth from his flesh. I've done that before, too. So, yeah, think about that. Now, and of course, with injuries, or at least after the combat, how do you manage healing?
And that's another important thing. In a... like Shadowrun, something like that, right? If you've got something other than a street sham, are you healing? Is somebody really trying to do first aid while the bullets are flying by? I mean, I know it's possible. We have combat medics in real life.
Sure.
But
you might just toss their ass in the van and get to the dock wagon.
Right.
Now, if you're in a fantasy setting, you might you might not have, you might be dragging people while the monsters are at your tail.
Sure. I mean,
and this brings something up, by the way. How do you heal during a firefight?
Right.
A lot of game mechanics are what we call like easy heal mechanics, in that I get injured the same round the cleric casts heal.
Sure.
Some systems, and it depends, some of these are house rules, and some of these they've incorporated into newer editions and stuff. Some certain spells or abilities take a lot longer to heal the character.
Yeah, like a take a heal over time, right? 3.5 had lesser vigor, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Those were perfectly fine for downtime healing.
But for combat, they kind of sucked.
But for combat, that one hit point per round probably isn't saving your life. And the same goes for any game that has heal over time mechanics versus instant healing mechanics.
And just that factor can make the difference between a easy combat and a very difficult or one where you have to use a lot more tactics.
Oh, yeah. Well, lethality in a game determines tactics and strategy.
Correct.
So if you are in a high lethality game, you don't just scream charge and go for it.
Yeah, because one or two crits from the monster and your head might be rolling down the street.
Right.
Speaking of crits, let's talk about when you really hit well, or when things go really well for either the players or the opponents, monsters, robots, spaceships, whatever the hell it is.
Well, you know, for D&D and a lot of games, the standard option is extra damage.
Yeah, either double the damage or you
max out one die and then roll the damage, stuff like that.
And there's lots of homebrews that do different things for just extra damage. But
right.
Let's go a little bit beyond extra damage. What else can happen when you crit?
So,
and by the way, I want to stress, this isn't just for the monsters that you slay. This could happen to you
as a
character, which makes for really interesting role-playing, I think.
I agree.
And really pisses off your player characters sometimes if you, again, session zero, all of this.
Right. So what if you give your players / monsters options for when they crit? What if you stagger somebody and it gives the next person in line advantage?
Okay.
Right? Like, if I'm wielding a blunt weapon and I really rattle somebody's bone box, then you grant advantage or impose disadvantage on the target of the crit.
Okay.
I mean, that makes sense, right?
Sure. Another thing you could do is hit vital areas as well.
Sure.
So, and that might, again, impose an advantage or a disadvantage, but maybe if you hit them in the arm, you lop the arm off.
Sure.
Now, I could potentially still attack, but I'm missing a limb.
And, you know, then you can also get to decide things like, does that cause damage over time? In the real world, obviously it does. But in a fantasy world, is the loss of the limb the extent of what that critical damage does? Well,
you even talked like dirty tricks and stuff, right? Throw some sand in somebody's face.
Sure. Blind them.
They're blinded, right? You could, if you critted, maybe you strike across the eyes and now they got blood in their eyes and they can't see. Again, that mechanically may impose a disadvantage or some kind of, you know, penalty, even like a penalty to attack or something like that.
Sure.
But from a descriptive aspect, that's way cooler to talk about. Even if mechanically it doesn't really do much, that's way cooler. But like, yeah, you just lopped his hand off. He can't use that hand now. He's still fighting.
Right.
But they're also bleeding out because there's a hand there, right?
Right.
You know, wounding is another thing that you don't see a lot of either. Like, when you get hit with a sword or something like that, you're going to continue to bleed unless the bleeding stops over time.
Yeah. 5th edition basically did away with that, but depending on what you and your group want to do, you can totally put that in.
And some other systems
still do it,
or they do the disadvantage type thing, or they have like a health box where after a certain point, they're minor injuries, then they become major injuries, then they become life-threatening or critical injuries. And that's kind of a cool system too, because I'm okay, man, I'm really hurt, I'm almost dead.
Right.
And that determines
how hard. And they're stacking disadvantages to each of those.
Correct.
And I like that as well, because realistically, if you're almost dead, you're probably not as fighting as well as you were 10 minutes ago when you were perfectly healthy.
You might actually take damage for trying to keep attacking.
Yep.
Yeah. Another thing you could do is impose a movement penalty.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
He stabbed me in my foot. I'm going to move a little bit slower.
There's nothing wrong with stabbing somebody in the foot.
They can't run after you if you kneecap them.
Exactly.
Now, one of my favorite things when you crit is to give someone an inspiration point.
Yeah.
And that's a D&D thing, but you could do this in any game, really. And it comes down to Exalted. And I don't know if you played Exalted or not, Matt. It's been a while.
Yeah.
But one of the things I loved about the combat system in Exalted is they gave you bonuses to your roll if you describe the combat more. So if a player came in and said, I hit the guy with my sword. Okay, you can hit the guy, roll and see if you hit the guy. If you come up and say, I leap over my horse, land gracefully, pull out bone slasher, my sword. It rages with its own inner fire as I slice across the guy's gizzard and, I don't know, cut him down. Or people don't have gizzards, but you get what I'm saying, right?
I eviscerate him.
Yeah, I eviscerate this person and stand on the corpse triumphant. Roll for that, and I'm going to give you some extra dice to make sure you get it. And inspiration points are very similar to that.
Sure.
And I would totally award extra dice, an inspiration point, an extra attack, anything if it gets the player to role play more.
Right. Because as stated before, combat should be part of the story, not apart from the story.
And it doesn't matter if it's de-escalating someone to put the gun down or a wizard casting a spell or doing some kind of crazy aerial maneuver in Star Wars. It doesn't matter. Like, the player describing that in the moment is what makes for good storytelling.
100%. Something else you could do is you can demoralize an opponent by just absolutely
destroying the
clobbering somebody, right? You could take D&D, for example, or any system, right? You give somebody, the opponents, a minus to attack this person because they've seen what happens when the sledgehammer comes down.
Sure. Yeah. If you turn some guy's head into a melon,
right? If you Gallagher somebody,
his buddies are gonna look at you like, maybe we don't want to kill that guy. We're gonna be over there across the street.
Check, please.
Yeah, we're good, man. We didn't really want to pick your pocket or whatever.
So yeah, like there's options beside just extra damage. Extra damage is great. People love big numbers. I get that. But what if you want to exercise a little more creativity? And what happens when you get the perfect swing in?
Absolutely. So dig into that.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about injury. What I like to call how you'll feel in the morning.
Sure. All right. So hit me. What you got?
Well, most games, we mentioned this a little bit with what we just described in terms of combat. Most injuries kind of suck mechanically. When I have an injury in the game, it's like, I got a -2 to whatever, right?
Right.
And so that's all right, but they don't really do much thematically. And so we want to turn up the heat, make injuries interesting to either play as a antagonist, like a personal antagonist,
yeah,
or just something interesting for players to show off. Like, and we'll get to scars in a minute, but you've got a great thing about that, right? So let's talk about detriments first.
Okay. One thing that injuries 100% make you is trackable.
Sure, because if you're favoring a leg, then it's easier to track you.
If you're trailing blood, if you're like, everything about injuries makes you trackable.
And that's something that you don't see in a lot of games, is the fact that if there was combat, and even if you were healed, you've spilled blood.
Yeah.
So let's go to a typical dungeon crawl. We just wrecked a party of giants in this dungeon, right?
Right.
There's blood everywhere.
Yeah.
Now we all got healed up. We're perfectly fine at full hit points. Everything's cool. The rest of the dungeon can smell the death all over us.
Yeah.
Because we all got cut. Unless you pressed
the Matt answer to this.
The Matt is prestidigitation.
Right.
That's the Matt answer.
Yes.
Prestidigitation, everything. Cantrip clean.
Absolutely.
Got it. But Most parties don't think about that. They just cover themselves in the blood of their enemies and keep going. Well, now you stink to high heaven and every monster in the level wants to murder you.
Sure. Or, you know, for the unintelligent monsters, we smell like lunch.
Sure.
Like, it's not necessarily that they're angry at us. They just want to eat us.
Now, in a horror game, if you are injured, oh, yeah, they're totally tracking your blood.
100%.
And you're slower, and you're concentrating from a role-playing perspective on your injuries.
Yeah, you're distracted.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, we talk about the penalization as well, right? Doesn't, because you're blinded, you're missing a limb, something's going on, right? They broke your back.
Yeah.
You know, your foot got stubbed. I stubbed my whole foot, not just a toe, but the whole goddamn
foot. The whole
foot. They stubbed my whole foot. How does that happen?
That's garbage.
That is garbage.
I've done that. That's when you actually step on a round rock, it hits you in the ball of your foot, and your foot just cracks around it.
I don't even want to think about that.
It's terrible.
Now, here's
from
something.
Experience.
Yeah. So, injuries are detrimental, obviously. We all know this. We've all been injured. That's what happens. But what most people don't think about is injuries are adventures that you can overcome.
Right. If you take the whole, you're bleeding, you're like getting back to your home base, just as a concept.
Sure.
Right? Like that in and of its, going out on an adventure is one thing, but most people don't think about
returning,
successfully getting home.
Wounded.
Yeah.
You've only got two rations left. You're dying in the desert, or even like the great, well, look, think of like the great comebacks as well. Maybe you get permanently injured, like the Bane and Batman episode, right?
Sure.
You know, Bane broke his back. He had to come back from that. That was a great story. That's a story of redemption.
Right.
How do you overcome something like that? So you could play something similar to that if you want. Again, it's up to the characters, up to the players.
Yeah. So you get home. You succeed that.
We got to recoup.
That trial. Yeah, you've got to recuperate. And depending on the game and depending on how you run a game, that how long does that take?
Could take forever. Could take minutes.
Sure.
Again, if you're playing the anime style, they might be good next day. If you're doing something gritty and realistic, they might have to operate. They might have to hack off the old arms. Yep. Replace them with some chrome and steel, and while I'm at it, go ahead and upgrade my cyber eyes and so on and so forth.
Sure. This data jack's got a little static in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Top left corner of my HUD's garbage.
I can deal with the essence loss. So what are the effects of recuperation? Are you in a hospital? Is there an elven shaman that's whispering mystical stuff and pouring hot soup on their wound and it's closing magically? I don't know. Whatever the hell is going on, right?
Sure.
Describe that stuff. It's cool to describe that stuff. Here's something that I want to do sometime in a game.
Okay.
Let's say you're severely wounded. You're in a coma, or maybe you're just, they drag your character back to the healer, right? And the mystic's chanting over you, or you're in a hospital or something like that. You know, whatever game you're playing.
Right.
That's a perfect time for a DM to run a mini game for that character. You can do this. You don't have to do this in game. You could do this like outside of combat or outside of the game as like kind of like a one-off or something.
Right. A one-on-one type scenario.
Sure.
Yeah.
And they're inside the person's mind as they struggle to survive. Like what kind of cool stories.
Kind of Psychonauts-ish.
Very so, yeah. Very much like the game Psychonauts. And if anyone hasn't played Psychonauts, go play it. It's great.
But yeah, no, that's a great idea. I think that's a super cool concept. And it would actually, one of the things you could do with that is you could allow them to play a completely different character. Like they're still playing themselves, but what if they're a wizard in their own head? Normally they're a street Sam, but now they're just like, man, I'm free moving in my own environment.
Casting Powerball and just chucking urban renewals inside my own skull.
Yep.
Meanwhile, the outside meat body is more machine than man, twisted and evil. Yeah, I love all that. So think about ways you can incorporate stuff like that. Now, let's get to scars, because I love this story. Matt and I were talking about this before we recorded this, and I want to. Can I preface this?
Yeah.
So first off, we both believe that you should have scarring in the game, in any fantasy campaign or sci-fi, And the reason is because scars tell a story. Your injuries tell a story.
Right.
It's not just about the scarring, though. Because, you know, magic can heal over that stuff in most games. But they don't explicitly state that it does. It explicitly states that it heals them.
Right.
And so it really depends on the typical storyteller. Do you heal them? Because there's one thing when I roll into the dungeon, I take a whole bunch, I get knocked down to one hit point, and then I get healed and come back, and I look perfectly normal, just like the other adventurer before I walked in.
Right.
If I get healed up and I'm just this mass of scars, then there's going to be some differences when people look at you when you roll into the inn.
Right.
Now let's get to your dragon example.
Okay, so one of the things we discussed is you walk into town, and maybe the NPC guards are like, oh, you look like trouble. Why should we let you in here? Or, you know, oh, we've got a job. How can you prove that you're capable of doing this job? How do we know we're not just spending money to send somebody to their death and we've got the same problem, right? So you look down, and you're your barbarian. You set your giant hammer head down on the ground with the handle facing up, you know, so it's handy.
Sure.
And then you pop off your tunic. And
which happens to be made of green dragon skin.
Yeah, man. You know, and when you pull off your green dragon skin tunic, then you can show off the rest of your blue dragon scale pants.
Of course.
Right. And so, you know, you pull off your tunic and you've got this huge row, this perfect crescent, if you will, of teeth marks from where you were inside, clearly, of a large creature's mouth. And, you know, maybe there's a little acid etching in there. Maybe there's a little fire. Maybe, you know.
Yeah, you got some scars, some burn scars from where the hot breath bit down.
Yeah, I mean.
You got a bag full of bones in your backpack. You're like, well, I just need to get my red dragon armor. You think I'm qualified, asshole?
Right.
So.
And you turn around, and you do this on purpose. You turn around to pick up the hammer. You didn't need to. It was handy. But then the shield that's on your back.
Made of a white dragon.
Made of white dragon scales.
Of right. Course.
Yeah. And you're just like, so your goblins don't worry me overly, little man.
So that's the difference between the pristine adventurer and the heavily scarred adventurer. Now, thematically, that is badass.
Sure. It gives you the chance to have a moment that you wouldn't have had if you were perfectly healthy. Like, Grandpa could have been a badass adventurer and just given you some clothes, but when you've got the proof on your person, that changes things.
Sure. So, this is an example. Mechanically, doesn't change anything.
Nope.
Numerically, doesn't change anything. Thematically, changes everything.
Absolutely. And I personally, as a game master, would give somebody an advantage, a plus, something to the intimidation there, or even the persuasion there, if it's appropriate, right? Depends on how you were couching your conversation.
Yeah, and you can do this with the characters as well. You can basically say, look, restoration magic has the ability to remove your scars or keep them. Let your characters decide, right?
Yeah.
Your character may want to play, I don't want scars, right? Maybe I'm a cleric of Soon.
Sure.
The goddess of beauty, right?
Yeah, you got to keep pretty.
Can't mar my perfect face, although what a great role-playing experience that would be, yeah, right?
That was in...
Cleric Quintet.
Nope.
No?
No. That was Time of Trouble series.
Oh, yes. Because he ended up becoming a priest of Mistra.
Right. Waterdeep, Tantris, and...
And that last one.
Was it Shadowdale? Waterdeep, and Tantris?
I don't care.
But
it's been too long.
Yeah.
So think about restoration magic overall. Does it scar? Does it remove the soreness as well? I don't know about you guys, but I got a couple scars. Matt's got a couple scars.
One or two.
When we wake up in the morning, we're like, fuck this scar, right?
Yes.
It's sore. I can't stretch the same way I was. Is it just faster healing? Now, one of the things.
I have barometric scarring, so.
Yes, you do. Now, one of the things I like that you wrote down is it tinted by the magic that healed them?
Man, I love that concept. And like, to me, it just, once again, it's thematic. It serves literally no purpose whatsoever. But maybe if you have, are healed by a cleric of Pelor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's got a little bit of that golden hue to it. Or probably going to be, for Vecna, maybe like something a little more dark purpley, a little more ominous looking.
Yeah, like an angry purple scar.
Yeah.
I could see that. Like, he was really just loath to heal you at all. Why didn't you just embrace undeath?
Right.
So think about it. These, again, more thematic elements for your campaign.
Yeah. And there's, it doesn't matter whether or not it serves a function. It serves a story function.
Correct. Now let's talk about death, our final topic of the evening. And I have three themes behind death, character mm-hmm. death. Death should be dramatic.
Sure.
Death should suck for the characters overall.
Yeah.
And death should not be the end of the story.
Right.
Because it's a game, guys.
Sure.
So let's jump into the dramatic aspect of death.
Mercutio. That's my give right there. Right? Like, okay. He gets an entire monologue while he's bleeding out.
Mm-hmm.
A dog, a house, a dog, a cat, a mouse, a rat to scratch a man to death. Right? Like, your players deserve that.
Every anime monologue death scene.
Yeah.
Every sci-fi death scene. I mean, they always have like at least a couple of sentences.
Yeah. The only person that didn't get one was Wash.
That's a good point. Yeah. One would say that his death monologue is while he's flying the plane.
That's true.
Or while he's flying the spaceship.
I am a leaf on the wind.
Watch how I soar.
Gig. Yeah.
Unfortunately. So this is a huge moment for the character in a battle.
Yeah.
So let them ham this up to 11. You ham this up to 11. They're dead. You've killed the character off. Congratulations. Hopefully it's not a TPK.
Right.
If it is a total party kill, then you better give them something worthwhile.
Sure.
Give the players a death scene, a monologue.
Maybe it starts the Ghostwalk campaign.
That is, yeah, we'll get to that. We'll get to Ghostwalk in a second. Now, I love this example, and I know you do too. Give the players an extra death round.
Yeah. Like, you're going out, and you just blaze. Like, you tell the player flat out, you are dead. You have one round.
You're a dead character walking. Do whatever the fuck you want. You can blow all your spell levels at once. You can rage as much as you want. You can cast a miracle as a cleric. You can eat your own.
I don't know.
You can eat your own lightsaber as a Jedi, whatever the hell it is, right? Like, you could do something I would let them do something ridiculous. Maybe not out of the park ridiculous, but something that clearly mechanically you normally can't do in a round.
Right. Like, you know, I don't know that I would go, especially for higher levels. I would say take your mage, for example, right?
Mm-hmm.
You get an action surge with two spells. And you get to keep your reactions to use those two before the end of your round if it comes up, right? Like, and give them two rounds worth of whatever it is they're doing. If you do the final strike type thing, right? Like, if you literally blow all of your spells, like the Staff of the Magi type thing,
mm-hmm.
I'm okay with that, but there's no coming back at that point.
Yeah, so no resurrection
all the way
like
out. You go straight to heaven, hell, wherever you're going, and that's where you are.
No resurrection at that point, you're saying?
Yep.
Okay, I could see that. You can also toss in some music. This would be a perfect time to a little ambiance, right?
Yeah.
Light a candle. You're playing 10 candles.
Sure.
You blow another candle out.
Oh, no,
at
no,
that
no.
Point.
You,
yeah.
You light the candle. And okay. The second they're done, you just.
Yeah. Do some slow-mo descriptions. Go the whole nine yards, right?
Yeah.
Let the character, of course, you know, what was it? We were talking about this the other night, and you were just like, had a character just spit in somebody's face.
I was telling you that was actually one of the things that. One of us watches Critical Role, one of us doesn't. And I was telling you that one of the characters, even though he was given the chance to have final words, he just spat in the dude's face. And that's dope.
That's badass.
Yeah.
It's spit in his face. Die.
That's great.
That's exact. Yeah, as the light from his cyber eye just kind of... It's definitely a shadow run.
It really is. You are
all about it. All right. So we've gone through death should be dramatic. Death should suck. Now, this is something I see a lot. Again, depending upon your campaign, if death is just a, you know, what, 1,000 gold piece gem away to resurrect somebody?
It's, I don't even think it's 1,000 anymore.
Really?
Yeah. And it's not a 5th level spell anymore.
How dare they?
It's a 3rd level spell.
If it's so easy to resurrect someone, the meaning is lost and the game is slightly duller. Now, if you play D&D or whatever game as a video game type style, again, going more anime versus gritty realism here.
Right.
If these are the two spectrums we're using, as if we're like scientists weighing the yes. thematic amounts of stuff. This seems, I judge this to be anime style. I mean, you know.
Right.
The point is that make the death count, right? So if death sucks, maybe it's a lot harder to come back when you're dead. Or, because you don't want them to not come back, but the process of bringing your favorite character back should be an adventure of some sort.
Yeah. I'm with that. Plus, there's lots of ways to go about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think each time you die, it should definitely be harder to come back.
Yeah.
But also, saves to or not to res, even.
Mm-hmm.
Your character is in heaven or hell. Right? So, you've got that. You've got to resist the pull of that. Maybe,
chilling in the afterlife.
Yeah.
You know? Got a fine malt beverage, just sitting there under a tree, and a block of cheese. My dwarven self is, you know, sharpening my axe.
Or,
and they want to pull my ass back to go kill some motherfuckers? Hell no.
Right? If you follow a god of war, maybe you 100% are ready to get back into it. Maybe you did. Maybe your kill count's just not high enough, right? Like, maybe you're way down on the...
Or maybe you're slowly getting roasted over a fire because you went to hell.
Right?
And you're like,
whoa, I did not rate in for the hierarchy on this. I need to really get some more evil under my belt here.
Yeah. I really should have gigged some more people so that I could be the guy roasting someone.
Right? I did not burn down enough orphanages. Whatever.
So, arcane components could be required. And again, this could be an adventure for the party characters, not for the dead person.
Right.
Sacrifice from companions. I love this idea that maybe they have to sacrifice something of themselves to bring a character back.
Sure.
Or even sacrifice something of the person being brought back. Memory, like some cool thematic ways, like you sacrifice your memories as a character to come back.
I can see that. Like, that's a tough call.
Or, I don't know, the first kiss you ever had, or maybe you lose it.
The first birthday you remember.
Yeah. Right. Or the first digit on your toes.
Sure. Anything.
So you only got 10, unless you're, you know, multiple limbed.
Yes.
Or you have a lot more toes. So make it interesting, make it dramatic, make it meaningful.
Maybe they get shorter.
Oh, that would suck. Right?
Like, you just, you're getting more dominion. Like, there's literally less
like
of you there.
Lose like a couple of inches every time you get rezzed.
Yeah,
that would be awesome, because at some point you're gonna have this paladin who's like 4 feet tall as a human,
right?
It looks like a halfling. You're tall halfling, aren't you? How dare you? I am human.
Yeah.
I'm from Mirabar. All right. Finally, death is not the end.
No, absolutely not.
So regardless of how hard you make it or how easy you make it to come back, it should be possible to come back. But what is the cost of coming back? Now, we mentioned Ghost Walk, which many people do not know was a standalone adventure. The third edition?
Mm-hmm.
Where you started off, you guys are all dead. You're dead. Come back as a ghost.
You're former adventurers.
And you're wandering around in the Deadlands. And that's fun. And then eventually you come back alive. You fight your way back through the Deadlands, which is cool. So you could do that. Coming back could change you, either mentally or physically.
Yes.
So what happens when you get rezzed? What changes?
I also like the idea that coming back could change you spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
So what if, like, as a redemption arc, right? Like you said, you're roasting over a spit and you're just like, oh no, 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 no. Like I repent. I'm gonna save some people. Right. Or on the other side of things, Mount Celestia is bored. It is boring. It is awful for most people. What if you come back and you're like, you know, I'm still with this goodness, right? But this law thing, like, I'm really starting to waver here.
Like, I really like this chaos stuff now.
Yeah.
I like to be good, but I also like to party.
Right. Like, this is maybe it's time to look into Tamora or just anybody but who it was.
Sure.
So, yeah, like, that's an interesting option. It's a good chance for people to re-roll a character if they come back changed and they've been seriously considering.
You might come back with different class levels.
Yes.
That would be, so you come back as a very buff wizard. the barbarian gets killed by the dragon. The cleric spends all night hauling him to town, gets him rezzed. He comes back, starts casting fireball. They're like, we've already got a wizard. What are you doing? I was always a wizard in my mind.
I have the soul of a wizard, you hear me? The soul.
I learned about that when I was dead.
Oh, it'd be a great way to go with a pact for a warlock.
Oh, yeah. That'd be awesome.
That's a freebie. That's awesome.
You know, that's another way. That's a great story arc to multi-class as well.
Yeah.
So maybe you start off as something else and then you multi-class into a warlock because while you're down there, you had to make a couple of bargains to come back.
Sure.
Maybe you come back. Maybe there's no res. Maybe you just come back.
Yeah. Bling.
By the way, if you've never played Sin Eater, wonderful campaign because that's all about dying and coming back pissed off with the spirit latched onto you.
Right.
Your mind may be traumatized as well.
Yeah. Like, you have seen the other side.
And it may not always be good.
Right.
It may suck. So how does that work?
Or, you know, the other side of that is you've seen the other side. It was amazing. And you're frickin' back.
Yeah. So how do you deal with that?
Like, you guys have nerve.
You might have a torn soul.
Sure.
Pieces of you, like shards of you, just gone. And I love this one. Maybe something noticed that you came back.
Yes. There are, first off, the inevitables, right? One of them very specifically is designed for that. Maybe the Zelicut. I'm not positive, but
we'll go with that for now until someone corrects us.
Sure. And I'm willing to be corrected.
Could be the devil that you thwarted by returning. So maybe you were destined to go to the hells and someone rezzed you and like, no, I'm supposed to torture your soul for 1,000 years.
Yeah, like,
now you've made another enemy. He's really pissed because he was slowly roasting you. And
yeah, a fiend packed warlock, right? Like, it's time. Your deal with the devil is due, and your cleric's like, maybe.
Maybe not yet.
Maybe not yet. He's going to pay his deal, but I still have a use for him.
And finally, maybe something else comes back with you.
Yes. Like, man, sometimes you can't close the door fast enough, right? If the door's open, it's open.
So we've got a couple of options for you here. You've torn the veil of death, and some sort of spirit or monster is now let loose in the world.
Sure.
So your death... And it doesn't have to be right next to you. Maybe because someone resurrected you, elsewhere in the world, a great evil was now resurrected as well. Maybe for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So for every person that gets rezzed, someone else gets rezzed. And
could
it just happened to be a big bad, which can come out as a wonderful story arc.
Yeah. You got a spiritual parasite latches onto you and whispers in your ear.
Some nasty ass spirit came back and it's inhabiting the same body as you.
Could be.
Or it could be just something from beyond, from the far realm, perhaps.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, little tentacle action going on.
Could be. You could even end up with a freaking angel on your shoulder that you don't want there.
A literal angel? It would suck.
Just
you don't have to hit that person. I'm the barbarian. That's all I do. Now I cast spells, but still. You come back, but you're not fully in control of your body.
Yeah.
That's another cool thing, right? Maybe you black out for periods and wake up in just a slew of just urban renewals.
Yeah. What is it? It's
there's nothing but chrome and death.
Deadlands, right?
The Manitou.
Yeah.
Yeah, you come back, or what is it?
The Harrowed.
The Harrowed, yeah. Where you literally have an evil spirit warring within you.
Yeah. Sometimes you lose a battle. You maybe haven't lost the war yet.
Have a bad day, and next thing you know, you wake up and you come to your senses, and everybody in the damn bar is dead except you. Oh, you're dead too.
Right. So
you just happen to be moving
less
and
dead.
Yeah, you're less dead. So play around with it. These are just a couple of options that we have. Hopefully, you will enjoy these as well. Again, all of these comes down to thematics, descriptions, some mechanics.
I mean, a little bit, but yeah, just talk stuff over with your players. Like, make sure that people are on the same page, but let things matter, right?
Yeah.
Make it count. Injury matter. Let death matter.
Make it count.
Yeah. And use combat as part of the story. I know there's a lot of people who just want to make it a stumbling block to the story. Make it part of the story. It's okay.
Do you have some thoughts on combat, injury, or death that we may have missed? Write to us, info@goblinscorner.com, or you can reach Eric at goblinscorner.com or
Matt at goblinscorner.com.
We're on all the things. We have a Twitter at Goblins Corner. We're on Instagram, The Goblins Corner, Facebook, Goblins Corner. We have Twitch, Goblins Corner, a lot of Goblins Corner things. Come find us, goblinscorner.com, for all of the things.
Yes, indeed. So, yeah, we're the goblinist of corners.
It's true. That's all the time we have for tonight. Once again, my name is Eric.
And I'm Matt.
We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye now. The Goblin's Corner has been written and produced by Eric Holden and Matt Stig.
D20 did our music.
And this has been a Subterranean production.
Later.